CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, my colleague and co-host. And we go immediately to Tokyo. There is news of government changes in personnel in Tokyo that is significant not only for the people of Japan, but also for the whole of the Indo-Pacific defending itself from the aggressor in Beijing. Lance Gatling, principal, joins us today because Lance is our guide, our very careful guide on Japanese politics these many years. We have reason to believe there is going to be a profound change in the posture of Japan towards China. Lance is at Naxiel Research. Lance, a very good day to you. The news from Tokyo is that there's a snap election called on October 27th by the new man head of the Liberal Party, who is also the Prime Minister, Ishiba. You have introduced Ishiba over these last weeks as a veteran. What is the significance of the snap election, and veteran how? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Good evening, Gordon. Ishiba, Prime Minister Ishiba, is almost 40 years in the Diet. He had a short banking career, and he entered the Diet, and he became involved in an interesting lane for a Japanese politician. He's a very practical man in terms of his approach to national security affairs, very careful man, served as the Minister of Defense, and had a good reputation there. So he understands those issues and how to deal with the United States, and of necessity also the reactions that the Chinese have to the activities of the Ministry of Defense. So he ran for the fifth time and was kind of a dark horse favorite. I thought he would be an interesting prime minister, and he has proven to be so in the few scant days of his new administration. The call for what's called a snap election, one that is not dictated by the time limit of the current Diet, is his gauntlet thrown down to the body politic in Japan to say, either support my priorities or let me know that I don't have your support and we'll do something else. And what he has said he will support is looking into the status of forces agreement with the United States. That is the basic agreement by which the United States stations troops, military equipment in Japan. It covers everything from how army trucks are licensed in Japan, how the drivers of those trucks are beholden to Japanese law or they're not, and how aircraft fly and how all of that works out. The status of those forces. If you see the sofa, it's not like the couch I'm sitting on. It is a very important document. And the United States traditionally, in my experience, has been loath to renegotiate those because most of these were negotiated decades ago, and where the United States had a clear upper hand and was from a position of relative power, was able to get some very advantageous clauses. And the reality is, I think, is the what are called the alliance managers, the bureaucrats and military officers in Washington, D.C., who make their living managing this, probably rolled over and curled up their toes when they heard the term renegotiate the sofa, because no one, I think, on the American side thinks that they would come out stronger in such a renegotiation. But I think it's a reflection of modern Japan, not necessarily reflecting the fact that the United States is diminished in relative power from decades ago, but the fact that Japan has increased in relative power and has so much to offer. And also it is a perpetual, perennial problem with the Japanese people when they see something that they don't delve into deeply and don't necessarily understand the rationale, but they see this agreement that allows Americans to do things like buy tax-free cigarettes or tax-free alcohol or not pay Japanese taxes, and they don't understand why that's being given to a guest force like the United States. Department of Defense representatives in Japan, and there are 45,000 of them or so. So this is a tremendous presence, very important to both countries. And at some point, an old colleague of mine said, it's kind of like asking your wife, honey, do you love me? You better know the answer before you ask the question. So no one really wants to open this can of worms in the Washington side of the equation. But I think that it is a good time to have a frank discussion of how all of these agreements have served both sides. It should be approached with caution because, once again, it takes a long time to negotiate, and they're very impactful. Also, Ishiba has said that he wants to discuss the concept of bringing nuclear weapons back into Japan and actually have that open discussion. For decades, I was told by the Japanese bureaucrats and military that they didn't want that discussion. They didn't necessarily, some supported have the U.S. having nuclear weapons here. Others were vehemently opposed, but they didn't want to discuss it in public at all. Their notion was that this would be decided by the authorities that had been promoted into these positions, and that was part of their prerogatives to deal with those issues directly with the United States without interference from politicians or the people.
Gordon, you have a question.
Lance, do the Japanese people want nuclear weapons on their soil?
There are elements on all portions of the spectrum for this. Some that say you should never do it. Then Japan was served well. They would hold by what were called the three principles regarding nuclear weapons, that they would not be tolerated in Japan, they would not be developed by Japan, or Japan develop or sell the technology that could develop those weapons by anybody else. The three principles. Yet they're, in more recent years, they have looked very seriously at unrest, outright warfare in Ukraine between Russia and Ukraine and NATO's involvement. And they are now facing two neighbors that are armed with nuclear weapons, the People's Republic of China and the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, the North Koreans. And both are unsettling to the Japanese because of the rhetoric and the type of capability that's being developed. And by some people's way of thinking, the Japanese should pursue their own. They have 40 metric tons of plutonium. It's one of the largest stockpiles of plutonium in the world in a refinement program that has cost them tens of billions of dollars in decades in the serving. And some people would say that the only reason they do have that is to keep their options open so they could, in fact, develop their own nuclear weapons in a relatively short period of time. Ishiba has not said that directly. What he did say before the election was that he would entertain the United States reintroducing nuclear weapons, or somehow someone else would introduce them into the region. And he was never quite clear on what that meant. It could have been bringing the Indians into an Asian NATO, or perhaps Japan pursuing its own. It's just not clear. And there's also signs in the last interpolation, which just happened a couple of days ago, that Ishiba has actually stepped back from that and said, well, this is not going to happen overnight, but we do need to pursue these things. We do need to discuss them.
Lance, we have less than a minute. Ishiba is going to be tested by the Chinese. Is he going to punch back?
Well, it depends on what the Chinese test entails. I suspect that they will take a relatively muted approach to this until after the elections. They will respond to the elections. That's kind of what they do. They'll have plenty of time after that, and perhaps we'll have time after the election to see how the Chinese react. Certainly they will react. If he gets a strong showing, given this rather conservative and strong national security platform, and he is held, if he is supported in that, in the snap election, yes, the Chinese will respond.
Lance Gatling, a principal of Nexo Research in Tokyo, the change of government leadership in Tokyo, profound for the whole of the Indo-Pacific. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.